Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Bernard Thomas Milton, and welcome to the Metroplex Buzz. And tonight, we are so happy to have on our show one of our 2024 Living Legends. For our annual event, each year we have here in Dallas, Texas, at the Royal Oaks Country Club. But her name is Bianca Davis, and who is also the CEO of New Friends, New Life. So to tell us about her organization, as well as what's happening today, which is, I think, the National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. Hello, Miss Bianca. Are you on the line yet?
I am. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh,
so
thank
great
you
to be with you tonight.
Okay. Well, Bianca, tell us a little bit about New Friends, New Life.
Sure. I'm excited to share with the listeners this evening. New Friends, New Life is a nonprofit here in Dallas, Texas. We are an anti-human trafficking agency. We've been around for 25 years working to restore and empower women and girls who've been affected by the crime of sex trafficking and exploitation. So we provide counseling, case management needs, economic empowerment support, and really help survivors reclaim their lives as they recover from the trauma and abuse of being caught in the trafficking industry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. January, let's say that it's the National Human Trafficking Prevention and Awareness Month. And today, January the 11th, which is the National Human Trafficking Awareness Day.
Mm-hmm.
So by it being the fastest growing crime in the world, what is the Dallas, what is the percentage that you see in Dallas of what's going on in this area of the biggest issue?
Yes. So as you mentioned, this is human trafficking, National Human Trafficking Prevention and Awareness Month, and today is National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. Human trafficking was deemed a federal crime back in 2000, and starting in 2010, President Obama was the first one to sign Human Trafficking Awareness Day and Human Trafficking Awareness Month into law. So that became the time when we, as a nation, began to recognize it by having its own month. But this has been a problem that's been happening for as long as we can remember. It is a huge issue here in Texas. So Texas ranks second in the nation for highest number of human trafficking victims. This includes both sex trafficking and labor trafficking. And here in Dallas, we are second in the state behind Houston. So the state of Texas reports an estimated 313,000 victims of human trafficking right here in our state, and 79,000 of them are minors. And so, once again, this includes both sex trafficking and labor trafficking, but it is still a very huge and significant number. So it is a crime that is happening right here in our own backyard, and I think it looks very different from what people may think of. When we think of human trafficking, it's easy for us to think of what we see in the movies, right? So we're potentially thinking about a white van in a parking lot or some kidnapping that's happening. And although that may occur, it's more prevalent internationally to have that type of outward kidnapping. What we see in the United States and what we see locally is that it is very subtle. Our girls and our boys and men and women are being trafficked, and maybe they're still coming home tonight, living in their parents' home, or they're still engaging in normal everyday relationships, but they are still victims. They're not tied up in a basement or chained to a door, but they are still suffering from the impacts of this crime. Because when you think of the definition of human trafficking, it involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to compel someone to either commit a sexual act or to work against their will. So the only ingredients there are that it is by force, fraud, or coercion. It doesn't have anything to do with traveling across a border or moving from state to state. None of that has to be present. You can be born and raised in your zip code, in your neighborhood, have never left, and still be a victim of this crime.
Can you explain to me when you say, for instance, if a young girl is living in her parents' house, and she, her parents don't know, but she's been forced. Mm-hmm. So that's human trafficking when she still go back outside that door, back at her parents' house, and allow this to happen to her?
Right. And so a point of clarification is, if this person is a minor, you don't even have to prove force, fraud, or coercion. And that's very important. So if someone who is a minor is being trafficked, it's automatically a crime. You don't have to prove that they are forced into it or coerced into it, or they're in it under the guise of fraud. So that means that there can be a 14-year-old girl who comes home every night, but she is in this trafficking situation where someone is having her commit a sexual act and is profiting from that, who is selling her to other people, selling her to his friends, selling her to his quote-unquote customers. That is the definition of her being trafficked. She doesn't have to be gone from her home as far as being kidnapped or being, you know, unaccounted for. She can still be in the home and be a victim of trafficking. There was a story a couple of years ago, this was in the height of the pandemic, of a middle school history teacher who lived in New York State who had been grooming a 14-year-old girl in Tampa, Florida. So through the internet, through social media, he is engaging in this grooming process with this girl. He flies down to Tampa, gets her to leave her parents' home at night. He assaults her at a hotel and sends her, and she goes back home and tells her parents, like, this is what happened to me. They had no idea that she was caught in a situation like this. You know, she wasn't a runaway. She wasn't missing. They thought that everything was fine. They had no clue that this crime was being committed against their daughter. And so that's how it happened. In the context of her still being a part of her family, still going to school, still doing these everyday things, but she can still be a victim of sex trafficking. And that's why it makes it so hard to identify and to account for, because in her eyes, chances are she thinks she's just in a relationship. She may think that this person initially loves her, and he has convinced her that this is something that you need to do for our betterment, you know, so that we can take that trip to California that your parents don't let you go on, or whatever lie he's telling her to make her think that this is a viable option and that there's nothing wrong with it. We see that all the time, that that's likely how it happens locally, as opposed to being mainly a kidnapping situation or a stranger danger situation.
Well,
additionally, the average age, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to say the average age that a girl is trafficked in the United States is just 15 years old. So this is not someone who has the wherewithal and the ability to make choices for herself. This is not a choice. This is someone who has been groomed, who has been manipulated, who has been lured into something that she really feels like there's no way that she can get out of it. So she's very vulnerable, and traffickers are taking advantage of the vulnerability of our youth, particularly our young girls.
Okay. Looks like, I'm glad we have you on, because it's so much of this possibly could be happening today.
Yes.
And sometimes parents may not know, and those that don't know, that could help their children, maybe if they, why is it that these children, you think, is not being able to talk to their parents, to tell them what's going on? I mean, sometimes when children leave after a house and come back, and they go out with the man who they like, and you may say this is sex trafficking, but if she likes what she's doing and keep doing this, I feel like it's more prostitution than sex trafficking, because she should be able to tell her parents. What do you think that, why that child is not telling her parents?
Well, first I want to clarify that you bring up a very important piece of this puzzle. But when it comes to children, there is no such thing as a child's prostitute, right? Because a child is protected by the law as someone who is not able to make these choices, right? So it's automatically a crime for an underage person to be engaging in this activity, even if it seems like it's willingly on her part. Because what we know, what happens a lot of times is the trafficker will hold something over her head, back to your point about the line of communication between parent and child. He'll hold something against her that makes her feel that she cannot go to her parents to talk about it. So, for example, if she sends him a nude picture of herself, he will then say, you know, I have this photo of you, and if you don't do X, Y, Z, I'm going to show this photo to your parents or to your pastor or to the principal at the school. And in her 14-year-old mind or in her 15-year-old mind, that's the absolute worst thing that could ever happen. She's thinking of the shame, the disgrace. And if the parents have been unable to develop or keep those lines of communication open, she's thinking she can't recover from it. So one of the tips that we provide for parents, really there are two major points that we offer for parents. And the first is to create an environment where your child understands that there's absolutely nothing he or she can do that would make you turn your back on them, right? Because the trafficker is banking on that. The trafficker is hoping that the child feels like, I have crossed the line, maybe I did run away, or maybe I, you know, he has photos of me, and if I tell my parents, they will never forgive me, they will never accept me, they will never receive me. That's the lie he wants her to believe. So we tell parents, and sometimes that is a lifelong journey of creating this environment where your child knows that home is a safe place, and it doesn't matter what situation I find myself in, I can come back home. So that's one of the most important pieces of advice that we give to parents. And the second piece is understanding what's happening online, because that online grooming is the easiest way that he gets into the mind of this girl. He convinces her that, you know, your parents don't understand you, or we're doing a photo shoot in Houston and we're looking for models just like you. You're the most beautiful thing we've ever seen. You know, he is constantly filling in the gaps. If there's any crack in her foundation, if she's being bullied in school, if she doesn't feel loved at home, maybe mom has a new boyfriend or a stepfather that she's not getting along with, or maybe siblings that she's not getting along with, any lack or any crack in her foundation, he's just looking for the way in. And a lot of that happens online when girls are venting, or they're looking for friends, or they think they're talking to another 14-year-old boy who lives in Mississippi, but he's really a 32-year-old guy who's just waiting to create the opportunity for the meetup so that he can further his cause. So it's really important that parents understand what's happening online and that they do their very best. And we know this isn't easy. It sounds simple, but we know it's not easy. But it is critical to keep those lines of communication open to fortify her against the actions and the plan of the trafficker.
And Houston and Dallas is leading the state of Texas.
Yes, Houston is number one and Dallas is number two. One of the more recent studies that we have from the University of Texas says that there are 400 teen girls who are trafficked on the streets of Dallas every night. And even when you look at women, so as I mentioned earlier, when it's a child, we know that there's no such thing as a child prostitute. They cannot make the decision to do this. But say you look at a 24-year-old woman who you see her on the corner or she's working in a club or you think that she's an escort, there is still a misconception that she is choosing this. What we know is even that activity is not a choice. She is out there because she owes him. He is threatening to physically harm her or her family members. He has all of financial control. She is trauma bonded to him through false love and affection. Like, there are all of these invisible puppet strings. If you can visualize a woman with invisible strings, with puppet strings attached to her, that's what really is at play when you see her on the corner. So it looks like there's an adult who's making her own choices to do this. But what we know from our time in this work is that no woman is choosing this for herself. It's actually the absence of choice, the absence of freedom that is forcing her down this path. And it gets very sticky because the act of prostitution is also illegal. And so she's now caught as both a victim, because she's a victim of trafficking, because someone is making her commit these acts and he is profiting off of that. But then she's also seen as a perpetrator because she's committing the crime, the illegal act of prostitution. So it becomes so convoluted when we recognize her as a victim, but society sees her as someone who is choosing to do something or that who is committing, or as someone who's committing a crime. And so in New Friends New Life, we really work to partner with the police department and the district attorney's office to make sure that we are all on the same page and understanding that she is a victim, and instead of re-victimizing her by, you know, sending her to prison and throwing away the key because she is committing this act, but we are working together to understand why is she out there and what resources can we provide to make sure that the victim gets the support that she needs and can get out of that life while holding the perpetrator accountable. And the perpetrators are not just the sellers. The sellers or the traffickers are only in business because there are buyers. So the buyer is just as responsible for this crime festering and growing as the seller, because without the demand, there is no need for a supply.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something. Do you go out and talk to some of the churches and tell them about your program and what they need to be looking out for and how these trafficking?
Yes, that's such a great question, and it actually ties into how we started. So literally about 26 years ago now, there was a topless dancer here in Dallas who walked into Preston Road Church of Christ one evening and said, can you please help me? And that's literally how our organization started. This was before sex trafficking was even seen, recognized as a federal crime. It was before we had a social understanding of what that meant. All the women of the church knew was that someone has walked in for help, and we're going to help her. So they started providing financial support, helped her get a job, provided the spiritual support that she needed, the emotional support, and she kept bringing her friends out of the club. And that's how New Friends, New Life started. So we do have our connection to the faith community. Mm-hmm. And today we go to churches, we go to corporations, we go to schools, just helping. We communicate in the healthcare field, in the airline and travel industry, whatever fields, whatever sector you're in, there's a role that you can play. And so we share in those environments what to look out for, and how you can be the eyes and ears of people who need help and don't know that they're in trouble or definitely don't know how to get out of it.
Well, you know, let me share something with you. The internet, I guess, I just don't know how it works. I mean, how, you know, TikTok and all this work. There are so many young people telling how they make so much money.
Yes.
Getting undressed, showing their body. Mm-hmm. Because these men wants to see that, and they pay for it to be a part of their page.
Yes.
In other words,
yes,
you have to pay to be on this page. And
yes,
these young girls is all on the internet doing this, and they're laughing at other people because they go to work every day, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They just be
right.
there showing their bodies and doing what they want to, shaking their butts.
Yeah.
And these men, some is old, some is young, is paying to
mm-hmm.
look at this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the girls
yeah.
saying that she makes more money than me. She got,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
So it makes you understand what in the world is the what's going on. It's like a
yeah.
satanic force. It's just all
mm-hmm.
over, and we don't know how to. I don't know how to control this. I don't know what to do about this. But and they laugh at people going to work because they don't have to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
All they have to do is just get undressed and get on the internet and camera and show their butt all day long. These are young girls.
Yeah.
And these men is paying them to do that.
Right.
So what type
and, you know,
of, is this sex trafficking also? What do you call that?
Yeah, so it could be if someone else is profiting from it. So there's a small percentage of people who are in this industry or in this world of sex work who have made the choice. They're like, I'm going to do this, and I am getting the money from it, and that's it. If they are an adult and they are choosing to engage in these behaviors and no one else is profiting from it, then that is their choice. That is not the majority of who we see, and that's not the criminal aspect of it. The criminal mm-hmm. aspect of it is if they're an adult, they are doing this because they are being forced to do it, they're being coerced into it, or they were frauded by it. So they thought it was something, and it turned out to be something else. But what we are seeing is, even in the example of, like, one of the examples of the platform that you're talking about is, like, OnlyFans is what it's called. There are women and
what
girls who
here?
Have OnlyFans, like O-N-L-Y.
Okay.
Yes, OnlyFans. There are women and girls who have been interviewed and people have talked to them about their OnlyFans accounts, and many of them are also saying, like, it's glamorized or sensationalized as something that's fun and you're empowered and look at all the money. And even those women and girls are like, you know what's been happening? Now I have been stalked by the people who are on my page, or I have been assaulted by them. You know, they've gotten to me, and that has led to physical assault. So it gives the perception of freedom and choice, but even in that instance, there is the spiraling effect, there is the abuse, there is the trauma associated with it. And so that's another thing that we're up against, the glamorization of these activities, whether it's through videos, music videos. You see these celebs, you see people who have sex tapes, you see people who have OnlyFans pages, and it's like, all looks good. But we know behind the scenes that there is still the trauma. When it comes to pornography, so the videos that are made to produce porn, a large percentage of those people who are in the videos are being trafficked, which means that someone is profiting off of them being in the videos, and they are doing that by force, fraud, or coercion. Many of them are under the influence of drugs and alcohol. It's just what you see on the video is not reality, right? They are victims of trafficking who are being recorded for the viewing pleasure of other people. So even within these types of sex work roles, trafficking mm-hmm. is present. So you can't have the act of prostitution that involves sex trafficking. Online videos and pornography, that involves sex trafficking. And so that's really our area of focus for women who are in this, which is the majority of them, the vast majority, who are in this because they have no other option, because they are being forced to do it or coerced to do it. We are working to help those women get a way out. And if they are teens, this is automatically a crime, and it's illegal. That's the thing.
Yeah.
This act is illegal,
it's
and I
illegal.
Think sometimes people forget that.
Uh-huh.
And I know we probably want to talk about the buyer side. I really want us to dig more into that, because your question around, like, how do we stop this? How do we stem the tide? The scariest thing is that the average buyer is such an everyday guy. He literally is the pastor, the attorney, the doctor, the teacher, the football coach. The average breakdown of a buyer is a 45-year-old male. 66% of the time he's married and he has disposable income. He is literally our everyday men. Those are the people that are fueling the industry, and that's the part that makes it so difficult to combat, because how do you change that mindset? How do you change the objectification of another human being? That's really what we're up against, that you are seeing someone as an object that you can use and dispose of at your will, that you can purchase at will, and that's what's happening all over the world every day.
Let me ask you something. You said you work with the police department and the DA. Mm-hmm. Is there a, I guess you could say a team or a group of people in law enforcement that's actually working with you all directly to help these people that wants to get off of, I mean, or wants to get out of this and they're afraid to? Have you ever worked with a team within the sheriff's department or the police department?
Yes. So we work with the vice unit within the police department. There's also an anti-human trafficking task force within the department. And so they work on different levels. There are those who are involved in busts. So you may recall there was a recent bust of an Airbnb, I believe, in the Plano area, where mm-hmm. neighbors noticed that there was just a lot of activity, a lot of cars, a lot of people, and the vice unit, you know, they had been monitoring it first for a lengthy amount of time, and they did the bust. So in immediate cases like that, there are women or the people that they find in those homes or that are part of the bust that are then referred to us for services. So we are in on the immediate cases. Where women are directed to us for immediate support, like where are you going to sleep tonight? What are you going to eat tonight? And how do we get you in our program for counseling and get you on the, you know, on the right track for conventional employment? So there is that immediate support that we provide. Also, if someone is picked up on a misdemeanor prostitution charge, they mm-hmm. have the option of being enrolled, in the choice to be enrolled in our program. And once they complete phase one of that, we have a four-phase women's program. But if they complete phase one successfully, then that doesn't have to sit on their record anymore. So that really gives women another chance to move forward and break free from that environment. So those are some of the ways that we partner directly with the police department. We also have a youth resource center that serves youth between the ages of 12 and 22. And the girls that are in that program, not all of them have been trafficked. Most of them actually are showing those vulnerabilities. So maybe they are in the foster care system, or they live with grandma, or they have come from backgrounds of domestic violence or extreme poverty. We know all of those things make them susceptible to seeing this abusive relationship or this trafficking situation as a way out or as a choice. And so we work with them to make sure that they can graduate from our program without ever becoming victims of trafficking. So there are several ways where we work with law enforcement and the police department and the DA's office to help stem the tide. Also, mm-hmm. in 2021, Texas became the very first state in the country to make buying sex a felony punishable by jail time. So I think that's a very, very important law, because it puts pressure on the buyer, that everyday guy.
Okay, you said buying sex.
A felony, yes. Yeah, punishable by jail time. Because before then, it would just be a slap on the wrist. You know, they do the bust. The only people they find is the victim, and they charge her with prostitution. The trafficker is nowhere to be found. The buyer gets, you know, a fine, and he is back to his life. But that doesn't change behavior. What changes behavior is understanding that if you're caught doing this, you could lose your family, you can lose your career, you can spend years in jail, you know, to help men make smarter choices. And so I was so proud of our state for being the first one to say we have to put some teeth behind this law and make it something that can deter and change behavior. So, and I believe there are one or two other states that have followed suit, but there aren't many. We were definitely the first in 2021 to make buying sex a felony punishable by jail time.
Well, let me share something with you, Bianca.
Mm-hmm.
I have some years in law enforcement, and I love
mm-hmm.
law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Every day when I went to work, I never know what to expect. Everything, that is the most exciting job a person can have
mm-hmm.
in law enforcement, because you never
mm-hmm.
know what that day is going to bring. But
yeah.
I hear you saying buying sex is a felony. What about
mm-hmm.
if that woman wants to go out there and sell her body? If she's doing that, is that a felony for her too? Because if the law makes her because she's doing that, she needs to also be known that if she gets caught, she also can get in a lot of trouble too, because maybe that would deter that person from trying to do that and go get some counseling.
Yes, in the small percentage of cases, where it is a woman's choice, then she is subjected to the same law, right? Because you should not be doing this. It is illegal to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the big picture is that I would even venture to say over 90% of the cases, over 90% of the time, she is not doing this by choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think for the small percentage of women who are just saying, this is what I want to do in our field, we may call it survival sex, or, you know, she is just doing this and she is getting the money from it, or she is doing that in exchange for something of value to her. But if there is a third-party person who is profiting from this and
mm-hmm.
who is holding her accountable for, if you don't bring me the money, here are the consequences. If someone is forcing her to do this and he is serving as her trafficker, then that's the illegal piece. And in that situation, she shouldn't then be re-victimized by being seen as a participant in a crime, right? Because she has no option other than to do this. What we also see is that about 70% of our women who come through New Friends, New Life, they end up with a criminal record. And most of those criminal records come from being picked up for prostitution. But some of them include things like maybe they committed theft, or they wrote hot checks, or they were involved in an assault. And so one of the things we're working on legislatively across the field, the anti-trafficking field, is how much of that is considered. Like, is her experience considered when she is up against these charges? Because if we can understand that there are things that she has been forced to do while she was being trafficked, then
mm-hmm.
can we give her the opportunity to have those crimes, those behaviors expunged, so that she can move forward? So that's a big discussion and movement in the anti-trafficking work. It's considering the context. If your life is being threatened, if you have no other recourse and someone is forcing you to do this, how much of this is your responsibility? So there's only a very, very small percentage of people in the field who wake up every day and say, I'm going to do this because I want to do this. What we know from the 350 women and girls we serve every year, every woman walks up to our doors and with pieces of their lives in their hands saying, can you help me with this? I have no place to stay. I have emotional trauma. I have a criminal record. I have no education skills. I can't get a job. That's who is typically trapped in the sex trafficking work, and that's the industry, and that's who we're trying to help.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask, do you all have your facility? Is it a place where they can actually stay there for a period of time, maybe a week if they was in trouble or something like that?
So we are more of, if you can think of like in the healthcare field, we're more of like an outpatient clinic. So we partner with other shelters that provide overnight beds, but New Friends New Life doesn't currently have our own residential facility. We're hoping that will change soon. But where we really specialize is in connecting survivors to resources. So we work with Austin Street Center for the Homeless, Genesis Women's Shelter, the Family Place, the Salvation Army, other entities where they have short-term beds and transitional housing. We partner with women. We partner with those agencies on that. But what we do at our offices is we provide the trauma-informed counseling support that our women need. Most of the women who are trapped in the trafficking industry, they have experienced childhood sexual abuse, witnessed domestic violence, all of these emotional traumas that our experts work to help them walk through and work through so that they are prepared to then get the GED skills that they need, or they're prepared to get a job or do other things. So we work on the counseling side and then preparing them for the workforce. That includes helping them get their records expunged, helping them get the education resources that they need so that they can move on and have careers and find an apartment and find a place to live and reunite with their families. A lot of them have interactions with CPS. You know, they have lost their children. Maybe they were addicted to drugs. All of these things are happening at the same time, and we're helping them work through that. So we have so many success stories of women who are able to finally sign their name on their own lease. I mean, something that they've never been able to do. They are improving their credit scores. They are getting promotions at work, achieving college degrees, and moving on with their lives. So it's really exciting every day, even though we're dealing with such a difficult issue and so much trauma. Our women are so brave and smart, and they are committed to changing their own lives. And that's not easy. And we see every day how hard that is, and they achieve that every single day.
I'm having some text messages coming in. I mean, there is a question about a young man. It's happening in these schools. Some of these athletes is like 16, 17, and they have these young teachers who is forcing them to have sex with them. Now, if a young man is in trouble and has a teacher that wants to have sex with him, what do y'all do for the young boy who is possibly could be sex trafficking by or forced to see this person or this lady maybe wants to buy him this and buy him that because of how she likes him, because of his muscles, and because that she likes him. Now, that's against the law. And I, like I was telling one of my friends, they need to make these teachers, they need to have an age limit. Because when these teachers are out of college and they're 20, maybe 25, 22, 25, and that child is 17, the young man may be 18, you're talking about maybe 5 years differences. And these teachers is liking that. And they may, a lot of teachers go and try to have sex with these students. And I've never seen the lack of things that I'm hearing because the police department looked into one of these schools and they actually busted three teachers. Now, what can you all do if a young man come to you and ask for help because he don't want to get his parents involved? Nor he wants to get, I mean, he's scared of the teacher because of what she can do to him and ruin him, ruin his career if he's a football star.
Right. Well, I want to clarify first that there's a difference between sex trafficking and sexual assault, right, against a minor. So that would be a slightly different situation because the trafficking piece is commercial. So it means that someone is buying or selling, purchasing, there's an exchange of money for the person. But if this is a case of a teacher who is harassing a male student, a minor, that may not be sex trafficking, but that could definitely be sexual assault. So at New Friends New Life, we specialize in serving women and girls. We do know that men and boys are trafficked, but this is still an issue that disproportionately affects women and girls, and that's our area of expertise. But there are other agencies locally and, of course, across the nation that also serve men and boys. And so we would definitely recommend if this person If it's a boy and they're local, there's a local nonprofit called Ranch Hens Rescue that specifically serves men and boys who have been trafficked.
It's called Ranch Hens?
Ranch Hens Rescue, yes.
Rescue.
Yes, and so they serve men and boys and would have the resources and the plan in place. But I would say if a young girl is experiencing trafficking or this relationship, because chances are the child isn't going to call it sex trafficking anyway, because they're not seeing it that way, because, you know, they're thinking kidnapping, or they may not even have a point of reference as to what sex trafficking is. But if a young girl finds herself in a relationship where this person is telling her, I need you to do X, Y, and Z, and if you don't do this, here is the consequence, then she can definitely reach out to us at New Friends, New Life for support, okay. Or her parents can. We also provide a caregiver support group. So these are for the parents or the caregivers of teens who are either trafficking victims or are vulnerable or at high risk. So we provide that expertise on how do you navigate these relationships, how do you keep the doors of the lines of communication open, how do you support your child out of the treacherous waters of, you know, being a potential target or coming out of a trafficking relationship.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Bianca, if a person wanted to contact you and New Life, New Friends, New Life, do
mm-hmm.
you, how do they do that? Do they go online or do they have a telephone number that you call?
Yes, both. So newfriendsnewlife.org is our website, newfriendsnewlife.org. There you can find all the resources. How do you get help? How do you volunteer? How do you learn more about this issue, just so that you can be informed? So newfriendsnewlife.org. Or you can call, our main number is 214-965-0935. 214-965-0935.
Okay.
We are also on social media. So we are on Facebook at New Friends, look for New Friends, New Life. We are on Instagram, also the same, New Friends, New Life. And we are also on X, formerly Twitter, as NFNL News. So it's the abbreviation of our name, NFNL News.
About you, Bianca, tell me about where you come from. Are you from Dallas?
No, I am not.
I don't mean to tell you to say where did you come from. I'm saying, where did you? Are you from Texas?
I am not
you're
even
talking
from,
about
I am
who
not
you are.
From the United States. I was originally born and raised in Freeport, Bahamas. So I am from the Bahamas, a little island girl who went to college. I graduated from high school at 15, so really early. I worked for a year in the Bahamas at a bank, and then I went to college in Philadelphia at Temple University at the age of 17. Originally, I had planned to be a physician. I thought I was going to be a neonatologist and take care of premature babies. And so my first year, I did biology pre-med, and I aced that. My second year, I got into organic chemistry, and within 3 weeks, I was out of there. I'm like, I cannot do this. It was so impossible for me. And so I shifted to a career in public relations, and that's what I got my degree in. So moved to Dallas. It's been a little over 20 years now, and started in healthcare. I worked at Medical City for 9 years. Doing internal communications, fundraising for the hospital, was fundraising for other nonprofits in town. And that's how I got introduced to the nonprofit industry, because I was working with the nurses and doctors and the team at Medical City. And every summer we would raise funds for a local food bank or a local domestic violence agency. And that's how I was introduced to this nonprofit world. And so in 2011, I started at Genesis Women's Shelter, which is a local domestic violence prevention agency, and did 7 years worth of nonprofit fund development. So really telling stories about who survivors are, what they need. That was one of the things that attracted me to New Friends, New Life, really the opportunity to show our community or to reintroduce survivors of trafficking to the community, to let community members know that survivors are so much more like us than different from us, that this isn't something that happens to other people in other places, and that this woman or this girl, the same dream that you had for yourself at 8 years old, she had the same dreams for herself. She just got to a fork in the road, and she didn't have the choices and the options that we have. And so it was so important for me to tell that story and to share that message. And I can't believe I've spent the last 12 years now in the nonprofit world. It's been rewarding to inspire people to see each other differently, to inspire people to take action, whether it's through financial support or volunteer support or educational support. And one thing I know is that this Dallas community is so special when it comes to philanthropy. It's the perfect mix of people who have the passion and the resources. And so we tackle big issues and say, we're not going to let this stand, whether it's poverty, domestic violence, sexual assault, issues with education. We take a stand against really, really big issues in our city. And if we were to look outside tonight, the Dallas skyline is lit up in blue because the city agreed to stand with survivors of trafficking on Human Trafficking Awareness Day. And so Reunion Tower, Omni Dallas, the Bank of America building, the three major or biggest, most recognizable buildings in our skyline are lit up in blue tonight in solidarity with this cause. And that is just an example of how committed the Dallas community is to big issues like this. And it makes it a very special place to do this type of work.
Right. Well, I just want to thank you for coming to Dallas and getting involved and being so, so much is you're needed of doing what you do. I just wish some of the churches will, especially the black churches, would get involved with what you're doing, because I mean, you know, like I'm a mother, I don't have any daughters. I have a stepdaughter, but not a biological daughter. But I see so many young girls who need some guidance, because these guys. I mean, when I was in jail, this guy used to say, "Miss Thomas, all I'm gonna do is just rubbing the top of her head. She gonna do whatever I want to do." That was, I mean, and that's been 20 years ago, and I was in law enforcement. But they would tell me this, and surely enough, these young girls were just that stupid, you know. I just feel like maybe if they had some type of Christian guidance as well. So if we have ministers that's here listening to you tonight, how could you work with churches to get these young girls? I know we could pray for them, but to actually work with them. Do you think they should have an 800 hotline, maybe, for a person can call in and tell their story? If they may not want you to know who they are, but if they call in and can talk to somebody,
I think there's several ways, and you raised such an important point, because black women and girls are the highest population of victimization of trafficking. So in our office, at our offices, 50% of the women we serve are black women, and 85% of the teen girls we serve are girls of color. So they're either black girls or Latina girls. So we know that this is an issue that disproportionately affects black women and girls. And so it is important. The black church, for example, is a perfect environment for us to provide the education and the support. And we do partner with churches. I think some of the ways we can help is invite us to come and speak at your women's group, at your Bible study. We have spoken even in pulpits on a Sunday morning. Last January in Human Trafficking Awareness Month, we were invited to Concord with Pastor Brian Carter, and I spoke on a Sunday morning. There have been other churches that have allowed us to do that as well, just a few minutes, because to your point, she may be sitting in the audience or in the congregation and may not want anyone to know, or she may not even recognize the trouble that she's in. But if she hears it, if she sees that there is help, who knows how we can plant the seed for her to then reach out for support. So there is an option on our website. I believe it's under Get Involved or Education, where you can request a speaker. And we have a team of 25. Any one of us who work at New Friends New Life are capable of coming out and speaking where appropriate to different groups. I think that's a very important first step. And then also getting the congregants involved in how you can volunteer. You can help serve dinner. You can help us, you know, engage in some of our activities where you can get to know the women and get to see where our office is. We have a partnership that we just started with the Meadows Foundation and Bonton Farms, where we opened Liberty Street Garden. It's on Liberty Street, which I think is so kismet. Like, we couldn't have designed that any better. We have a one-acre plot of land on Liberty Street where our women who are in our program, they get to work in the garden. They plant this and they do the harvesting. They not only get the therapeutic effects of that, but they get a paycheck. They get job experience. And so that's a place where church members can come out and volunteer at Liberty Street Garden and just make that a team-building, give-back opportunity. So I think there are really simple ways where we can engage with the faith community, because it's a useful platform. It's a way to reach people who may not otherwise step forward. So we're definitely open and have been working with different faith organizations and would love to continue working with more.
Okay. Now, let me go right back and ask you this again. If a person wanted to call, if a child is listening tonight and he don't want his parents to know, he don't want you to know who he is, but he have a problem and he needs to talk with somebody, is there or can they be or can there can it be a hotline for this child to call in?
Should the police have a national hotline? Yes. New Friends New Life doesn't have a 24-hour hotline, so we are just open throughout the week currently on weekdays, so that's the local number I gave you. But there is a national human trafficking hotline that is available 24 hours a day. You can text them, you can go to the website, or you can call them. So I can give you the website first. It's called it's humantraffickinghotline.org.
Human trafficking, okay.
Yes, humantraffickinghotline.org. And then let me give you the phone number for the National Human Trafficking Hotline. That's available 24 hours a day, as I mentioned, 7 days a week, and in 200 languages, which is also important.
Mm-hmm.
That number is 888-373-7888. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of eights.
888-373-7888. Okay. Yes. Now, listen, you got a lot of people listening. Before we go off the air, I want to give them a chance. If they have a question to ask you, all you have to do is hit the number one. I see a lot of people on the call that's listening in. So if you have a question for Bianca, that's all you have to do is hit the number one, and I can bring you into the studio. So let me know that if you want her to answer any of your questions. So also, Bianca, I want you to know that this is being recorded. I've had several people to text me that they're at a funeral wake. And I want to let people know my former pastor from my early days in Oak Cliff. I don't live in Oak Cliff anymore, but Pastor Michael Pryor, he passed away, and quite a few of my family and friends is there, and they were asking me how can they listen, and so I'm telling them that it's being recorded. So I'm letting everybody know that it is being recorded, so you can always go back and click on the link and hear exactly what we talked about tonight.
Wonderful.
So it's next week, tomorrow, tonight. After even after we go off the air, they can go back in and listen. But mm-hmm. I want to let you know, Bianca, because of the fact that I've worked, and I mean, you know, sometimes I would always tell my husband, it's so funny when you go to work and then you come home, you sit there, you wonder about what all those people told you, and you have to sometimes laugh because you can't believe half the things that they're saying, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I know things happen out there on that street, and I know that they're happening today. And so many of young people that I would, you know, I was seeing jail, and they were scared about coming into the jail, but they didn't want to be on the streets. So in talking with me as an officer, they would always feel like they could tell me anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell them, well, why didn't you call? They said, well, we didn't have nobody to call. Who can we tell? I can't tell my mama that.
Yeah.
So they can tell their parents, but they want to tell me, and I'm an officer. But yet still, they need to talk to somebody. So I've been telling the preacher, I've been telling everybody, you know, what are y'all doing to save these kids? Because there's so much going on, and you need to really try to help these kids with the nitty gritty of what they're going through every day.
And they're bombarded by so much. Yeah,
they are. They have this ego. They have people in the school making them like bullying them. You got other
girls
making them and telling them, if you don't do this, we're gonna, you know, the little girls are in there actually. It's other children in schools trying to get these children to do this too. You know that, right?
Yes. So they are recruiting each other. You know, they're recruiting, their peers are recruiting them. So the trafficker will sometimes send someone who is more close in age because he wants to make sure that their guard is down. So, you know, even as a parent, if you have a 14-year-old son, you may not think anything of a 15-year-old person befriending your 14-year-old. But that person could have been sent by the trafficker to create the friendship to start the grooming process. So you're absolutely right. They are up against so much in school every day.
Oh, my goodness. And it hurts me to know all of this. But, sweetie, I want to just thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Bianca, it's so much that we go through every day. And I'm too old to be in law enforcement anymore, but I surely enjoyed the years I spent in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought that I would have been there, but God puts us in different places for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and
we're so grateful for you. Thank you for your career and for your service. I believe that people who are called to law enforcement, there's just something special there. I think law enforcement and teachers and nurses.
so thank you
for your years in that field.
My lieutenant, that's not my field. My field is computer science and business.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a business. In fact, I started my business over 30 years ago. But I used to always talk to these, I guess you could call them inmates, like they were human beings. And they would always call me the... They said, we didn't pay you to be a caseworker because you're law enforcement, because I always cared enough about them to want to help them. So sometimes my lieutenant would call me a caseworker. You know, I would wonder, well, what's wrong with that? Because I was trying to get to help that child or to help that person in behind. So, sweetie, I applaud everything that y'all is doing. And you did tell me that if we wanted to have you out at some of the churches, that you all will come out. How about if you come out to just a community on a Saturday? If we gave you a sex trafficking, I guess you could say awareness reception on a Saturday.
Yes, we participate in those regularly. So I would love for us to connect on you know, a date and time that works, and we would be honored to be a part of that engagement, education.
Well, there's a lot of ministers just listening to you, so they know how to contact your agency because there's so many churches that need to know that y'all is there. And so many young people in these churches who needs to know that you're there. And they, they're willing to help. They come down front, they want prayer, but they need somebody to really tell them what this is the solution, this is this and that. So I applaud what you're doing. I really do. I'm so glad that you took time to be on a part of this podcast.
And Thank you. I am so honored. I couldn't be more honored
to be.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, sweetie, we got about 5 seconds before the show is Do you have anything you want to say before you go off?
No, I just want to say thank you for providing the platform and for making space for us to discuss and for just seeing other human beings. I think that's where we can really make the difference. If we can just see each other differently, we can really change the world. So thank you for being a part of that.
Well, thank you. All right. And have a good evening, sweetie. We're going to have to go now because I know we're out of time. And,
okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you.